Hello there, whoever you are. Welcome to the Bitter End Podcast with me, Tom Denny.
And me, Todd Jordan.
We're here, people. We've reached the end of the Highlander run. We've seen it through to the bitter end, as was our quest. But we're actually taking a little step back before we put a pin in season two to go and talk about and watch Highlander 2, the Renegade version.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the stubborn bastard son of a bitch that the Highlander franchise is. It's deja vu all over again.
Just when you think it's dead, there's another immortal hiding in a cave somewhere. And there's also another version of Highlander 2 that we feel that we should watch.
Yeah, so we've mentioned before that we're not that interested in ordinarily going back and watching director's cuts or alternate edits and things like that. We wouldn't normally count them as a separate movie than the original. But from what we've read online, from the legend that this movie, Highlander 2, the Renegade version, it seems like its own unique animal, or it at least wants to be.
Yeah, so I think the film's got like nearly like 20 minutes worth of additional footage. I think
his name's Russell Mulcahy.
Yeah, he went back and shot some additional stuff, did a different edit, because when Highlander 2 was being made, the company went bankrupt, and basically the film was edited together by the accountants, or like the people who like took over the Highlander holdings. He's gone back to try and, like, I think, right some of the wrongs, because this film was not well received when it came out.
He's such a renegade. He's such a renegade.
Can we just talk about, I love the fact that it's called the Renegade version.
Yeah, they tried to stop me. They tried to shut me down. I'm a loose cannon.
Like, you could have just said director's cut, but
it's
no.
Not a director's cut, Tom. It's a different film. For one thing, we know it's removed all references to Planet Zeist.
And that is why we are watching this, because Zeist is, for better or worse, quite definitely worse, the thing that you remember about Highlander 2 and what caused all of the upset. So I'm really interested to see how they've changed the context to make it something else.
Yeah. Now, Tom, is there a trailer for Highlander 2, the Renegade version?
No, there is not a trailer for Highlander 2, the Renegade version. But I'll tell you what I did find in the DVD box. There it is. It's this big.
Oh my god.
Like it's a full size.
It's like a broadsheet newspaper.
Poster pullout.
Oh my god, it's massive.
It's fucking huge. It's double sided and it is covered in Highlander merch. And this
is more important than a trailer.
Yeah, we'll have to post some pictures of this on like
this
on,
is unbelievable.
Because you can get a luxury rich velour bathrobe with the Highlander logo on it. You can get some Highlander boxer shorts.
They're covered in lightning bolts and they say don't lose your head on
them.
Yeah,
and then they also say, I think they have to say there can only be one on there somewhere. You can get wraparound shades that just like Duncan has.
It's called
in the TV.
Shades of Duncan from the TV show. This is incredible.
Even a mini little ID card holder where you can put your Highlander ID card in it and like mini sword. Anyway, I'm getting sidetracked.
You can buy actual swords. You can buy samurai swords.
It's all happening. I'm just gutted that if I sent a check off, I probably won't get any of this merch.
Tom, I've got to have that fucking velour robe.
Tell me about it. Flip the thing over, show me where the robe is,
because there's different colours.
It's on here. Forest green is nice.
Scottish green, immortal navy,
yeah.
Royalty purple, or quickening white. $65, I can do that.
Yeah.
Right, where's the phone number? I'm going to call them right now.
Okay.
Let's see if this is still a working number.
Here we go.
So, hang on. Okay, that's the number. It's a 1-800 toll-free. Open 24 hours, 7 days a week. For how many years? All right.
Do you think there's an immortal who's there manning the phones?
There'd have to be. What's the country code for America, to call America from here? Is it 01? I'm Googling it now. Country code. Other search engines are available. 1-800-203. I should probably beat these numbers out, really. 4-5-beep-beep. Okay. I've had to take my headphones off. Oh, it's not a functioning number.
Oh, motherfuckers.
Gutted.
But what it does have in here is a description. So by the producers and the people who put this fucking massive poster together anyway of Highlander 2, the Renegade version. And so I thought I'd just read that.
Do read the description and we'll treat it like a trailer.
Okay.
In a world,
Highlander 2, The renegade. The rebel endures. Nice. The struggle between good and evil creates its own battlefield. Legend has it that Highlander 2, The Quickening, fell prey to the bean counters.
That is not what it says.
Fucking says it, man. Fell prey to the bean counters, the least likely of opponents. The Quickening received a mortal wound. Unwilling to accept defeat, and driven by the spirit of the Highlander's anti-hero, the producers of the Highlander and director Russell Mulcahy set out to re-edit and create this significantly different version of Highlander 2. The renegade version of Highlander 2 was born. As with the Phoenix, rising out of its own ashes, so it was that the immortal Highlander saga would soar again. Renegade contains 19 minutes of never-before-seen footage, including an exciting mountain chase. The story has been restructured, and no trace of the dreaded planet Zeist has survived. Both the VHS and Laserdisc feature an astonishing reconstruction of the original version, digitally enhanced with the new optical sound and special effects. The soundtrack has been digitally remastered in Dolby SR with full surrounds. So that's $19.95. for that on video, $69.95 on Laserdisc.
Oh my god, I have to have the Laserdisc. That is so fucking grandiose.
Yes.
That is better than any trailer could ever have been. Has there ever been a blurb that thought as much of itself as
that? I know. It thinks a lot of itself while also saying, like, we done goofed.
There are presidential campaigns that aren't as self-important as that blurb.
Yeah, it's not like, we fucked up, but now we're fucking amazing.
We're back, we're kicking ass at the bean counters. Like, we're like a phoenix rising from the ashes. You guys better believe there's going to be a 19-minute mountain chase up in this mother.
I bet the head bean counter had a name that started with a K.
Yeah. Mate, I don't really think there's much else for it other than to just slam fucking head first into this white knuckle thrill ride.
Yeah, we'll see you on the other side.
Wait. Is there an IMDb listing?
No.
Oh, we can't do the game.
No, just because it's like, because it's a director's cut, that you don't really have, there isn't an IMDb separate score for it. So it just is what it is.
It just is what
we're just going to watch it. I don't know how much we'll actually have to say about it, because I know there's only like, we're watching this for like 19 minutes and some changes of context.
We're going to do a solid 40-minute podcast all about those 19 minutes.
I'm looking forward to the exciting mountain chase. See you in a bit, guys!
Bye!
Zeist is gone, people! It's not there anymore!
There's no such thing as Zeist anymore, Tom. Forget about Zeist!
It's not even there, although you did spot that someone in the credits is still left in there as, was it?
It was a Zeist official or something, was a name in the credits, even though they have systematically erased Zeist from history.
Zeist will still shine through in the credits.
Your tattoo, Tom, what are you going to do about your tattoo?
No!
Well, guys, let me tell you, me and Tom were more than a little bit worried before we started watching this that it was basically going to be the same film. Were we just going to watch exactly the same film twice with things in a slightly different order?
Yeah, kind of, sort of,
but the bits that were different were pretty considerably different.
Yeah, it does. I don't know if it's just like the power of suggestion, but I do feel that that was quite significantly better in not like entirely, but like in a lot of ways it's like, oh, it's like it feels like a better film.
Yeah, I mean, there's small changes they made that aren't significant. Or, I mean, all the scenes just have more time to breathe.
Yes,
there's less of this like hectic, come on guys, we've got to keep it under 90 minutes, we've got to slam in some more explosions.
Damn you bean counters.
Those evil bean counters.
Yeah totally, because like the running time is longer and I feel like maybe there was a different score, or like the use of sound is a lot better in this, and that has like such a big impact on film. And it's quite weird, like watching this, like there's just moments that like feel in this that they're a lot quieter.
Yeah.
And it's like the scenes are more powerful for it. I know it's a bit weird me saying that there are powerful scenes in Highlander.
Scenes.
Sorry for my pretensions there. But this is like, you know, we were watching this again, and like, I had to say, like, I think it's a really, like, a lot of the scenes in this film look fucking good. The opening,
yeah,
like, going back and watching the scene in the opera house looks really rad.
It's amazing. It's this big, sweeping, slow crane shot. You kind of come in cold off that. There's none of this, like, bullshit, we're going to recap, like, show you the ship.
Yeah, so that's the first thing
the
that's different.
Going up. They don't
yeah.
do that.
Yeah, you don't have... You just have, like, some text on the screen just saying the year is, what, 2024?
Yep.
The ozone layer is depleted. Everything is hidden behind a shield, and there's a resistance that think the shield is down. That's it. You don't have, like, what you had in the original cut, like, the scenes of the shield going up and all this exposition. Like they just, like, go, here, read that. And then you just get this very long, dialogue-free bit of, like, panning around the opera house,
yeah,
showing everything.
Wagner's playing.
Yeah, it's all derelict, and you see old man Connor, which is a much more powerful thing, because you haven't seen him, like, you haven't been introduced to him, like, putting up, you know, no, you don't know that he was the guy that put up the shield. You just got to, shit, this is the dude from the first film, and he's an old man now.
Oh, shit, son!
Yeah, exactly. And then we still get, like, where he hears Ramirez's voice telling him to remember, and, oh ho!
It's some big differences.
It's some big differences. It does not say 500 years ago on the planet Zeist.
Oh, no, no.
It just says a very long time ago.
That's it. And then you still get the shot of like the desert planet with a fucking crashed spaceship, which was used to represent planet Zeist. Here, this is just so long ago that was back when we had spaceships, but we'd forgotten all about them since. And then Sean Connery stands up and he goes, free people of the planet. Yeah, instead of the planet Zeist, free people of the planet. Just the planet.
Yeah. Very
just the planet. Free people of the planet.
We all know what planet we're on. We don't need to talk about
the
it.
The only planet that there is, Sean. Okay, just free people of the planet.
Let's not show off.
which is an interesting addition. At that point, things are kind of basically the same as the original version of The Quickening. Like, there's the evil general Katana, only it's not on Zeist. He's ruling, like, this old ancient version of Earth. Sean Connery is like, one among you will fight with me to defeat Katana. Turns out to be Christoph Lambchop.
They have the fingers in the bowl.
Fingers in the bowl, which is their version of The Quickening in this film.
Or just another version of The Quickening.
They fight Katana. They lose. Katana captures them.
Yeah.
This is where shit gets interesting.
Yeah.
So, it's
when he's in front of, like, they have, like, the Council of Zeist.
Yeah.
And
but it's not Zeist, Tom.
But not Zeist. This is the point when they would be like, we are banishing you to Earth.
Yes.
Where you'll be immortal. Here we have, like, Katana is kind of like, let me kill them. I want to kill them. The Council of Zeist...
Not Zeist.
Sorry, I can't.
Let it go!
I can't. So the Council are like, no, no. That's not what we do with like rebels or like that. When we banish them.
Wait. Can I have this before you do the big reveal of what they say? It's really important to note that the elders that are telling the story, their mouths don't move.
Yeah, it's fucking.
It's just been dubbed in because obviously in the original footage, they're all saying a bunch of shit about how they're on Zeist. They've got to banish them to Earth. So in this, they're sold to us as if they're just psychic or something. There's these three monks that just sit there. Their mouths don't move.
Blank face.
And a voiceover goes, shut up, Katana. We're not listening to you. You know what our rules are.
It's so fucking weird. Because like, there's obvious bits where you can, like, the bit with, there are bits where you see people quite at a distance and you go, that wasn't the original dialogue, like with Sean Connery and like free people of the planet. This bit, they just didn't have any long shots that they could use, and it's just so like no one is talking, but there is this voice going, "Now listen here, Katana. That's not how we roll here on Not Zeist. You know that what we do with people who are rebels, we banish them, we exile them into the future."
No!
they replaced Zeist with basically they're somewhere in the past on Earth in a time that is so far advanced as to have spaceships, laser guns, and time travel. And the way that they punish people is to send them into the future and make them immortal.
Yeah.
And so then it's like the same thing as like with Zeiss, that basically, oh, you know, if you are the last immortal, then you can either be mortal in the future or come back to the past.
Yeah, the exact...
It's so weird.
It's really weird. But yeah, the line is, you'll be exiled into the future and forced to face other exiles in deathly combat.
Mm.
So again, it's a bit of a sort of a Running Man-y kind of thing, where it's like they take all the criminals and ship them off somewhere to fight each other. But that somewhere happens to be thousands and thousands of years in the future. Why? Just throw them in a pit. Why do that? And at what point in human history did we lose the technology for time travel?
No, exactly.
And why don't we have that still?
And it comes from an era that there are obviously no remnants of left on Earth. And it's going to get weirder later on with like the backwards logic of this, because we were watching this like it doesn't make any sense, because it's like watching like a Terminator film or like any other time travel film, but they're always about people going from the future into the past to try and change it. You don't just be like, let's send people into the future. But then they can monitor them in the future.
Yeah, they watch everything that McCloud is doing on this little TV.
Yeah.
So, but that doesn't make sense, because he watches it as if it's live. So he's still in the ancient past. He's got a little TV. He's watching McCloud like running around killing baddies. And he's like, no, 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 this won't do. I'm going to have to go in there and intervene. And it's like, well, couldn't you have just watched that bit straight away? Like, as soon as you sent him, just go and, like, fast forward through... If you can view any point of the future...
But then also...
Like, it doesn't make any sense.
But then if he was watching that, couldn't he just go back to any point? Or is it just, like, that all... Because this is where, like, time travel in films gets weird, because it's, like, that all time is happening... Like, time isn't linear. It's all happening all at once. And the other thing about this, yeah, is that... Whatever, like, not Zeist now is, they can look into the future and see that that society no longer exists. So what did they do?
Yeah, he's like, oh, shit, I guess we lose the war at some point.
Yeah. Like, so this is the big... Zeist with this equally confusing and convoluted and making no fucking sense reason as to why there are immortals.
Yeah, because then, like, years go past, McCloud is doing his old man thing in the future. All of that still happens just like it did in the original version of Highlander 2. Katana sends his porcupine men to try and take down McCloud because they're annoyed that McCloud has chosen to stay in the future.
No, but they're
saying, worried he's going to come back.
But they're saying, like, he hasn't made his choice yet. But he's been mortal now for, like, 40-plus years.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, what do you mean he hasn't made his fucking choice yet? He's been sitting on it for 40 years. Like, I haven't made up my mind. I'm going to see how this old age thing works out.
And one of the porcupine guys is like, I don't think we should go and fight him, Katana. He'll be dead in a couple of weeks. Because he's old. But that doesn't make any sense, because it hasn't even happened yet. What, a couple of weeks in our time? A couple of weeks in his time? Just wind your little TV screen viewer forward a couple of weeks and see?
Yeah, like, if anything, they've replaced Zeist with a way more confusing, like, society for the immortals to have come from. Like, it makes... Zeist makes way more sense. Like, when you think about it, it's like, yeah, they're aliens. Okay, fine, I can take that. But it's kind of like, wait, they're from the past and they're sending people into the future? Like,
as a punishment?
As a punishment?
I'd love that.
I mean, it seems very overly complicated. I mean, you know, they used to just send people to Australia for that. Like, instead, it's like...
Australia's the future, mate.
It's like...
Yeah, so that's a weird setup. So me and Tom take a little while to... We're kind of reeling from this. Events sort of pan out meanwhile, while we're suffering the aftershock, McCloud is old. He kind of wanders around. He goes to the bar scene.
Oh, there's something very different. So the new little bit that happens in there.
Is that so? He meets
Rusty Schwimmer,
big Rusty Schwimmer fan.
Yeah, from who played Joey B.
In Friday the 13th, 9, Jason Goes to Hell, and also shows up in a star turn in
this. Yes, so she rocks up, tells McCloud off, she did in the previous film. And there's this new bit where, like, after she's walked off, she kind of turns back, grabs a bottle, and fucking twats McCloud over the head with it.
Yeah. And he cuts his hand.
And this is like a new scene that you see, like, where he looks at his hand and he sees it is bleeding and it heals up. And then he's kind of like, uh-oh.
Not again.
Yeah.
No, sorry. He goes, not again.
Not again, Jimmy.
Because he's old man voice then, yeah.
We had the same scene where he meets Louise, who is like the head of the rebellion with Cobalt.
They have a sex scene in an alleyway immediately upon meeting each other.
Oh, well,
and
no,
it's
no,
so
no,
well, much more intense.
Oh, no, it's like, well, it's after they...
But
after,
it's so much more
oh, yes,
intense!
It's after he regenerates. It's not
but
like,
then straight away!
Straight away. Yeah, it's not like when he's an old man and they have like a really intense... He was just kind of like, he's like, sorry. Hey, sorry about my weird voice before. I'm going to fuck you something awful in this alleyway.
Oh,
man. Oh, it's one of those things where you kind of like okay, so like the sex scene in Highlander 3 now makes more,
because the original version of this they just have a bit of a smooch,
but in this they just fucking bang in
like,
an alleyway,
straight up,
and
he like hoiks her up and pounds her against this wall, and she's like yeah, it's quite unpleasant. I'm just, as a little teaser that we'll get to, not the most sexually explicit thing that happens in this film.
Oh my God, yes.
I'm going to let that simmer for a bit and we'll address it when we come to it.
A lot of this is basically, apart from like obviously the future past world stuff, it's very much the same as the original version, just like the scenes seem edited and paced a bit better. The sound, again, like, seems better. There's still a bit where it's going, Ramirez appears in Scotland.
He brings Sean Connery back just by remembering his name. Just general recap, there's, like, obviously this shield blocking out the sun. There's still the terrorist group who are like, no, the ozone layer's fixed itself, guys, so we should probably take that down. Yeah, we should probably go do that. And then he gets involved with the fight to try and do that. Katana comes back to, well, not to Earth. He comes forward from the past, inexplicably allies himself with the S.H.I.E.L.D. Corporation.
Yeah. So there's a few bits, like, maybe, like, we didn't really, like, talk about, like, when we talked about this film the first time. So it's quite nice to, like, we've got the opportunity to talk about some of these things. Like, that when Sean Connery is in Scotland, it does not look anything like Scotland. It still looks like
Scotland.
Argentina.
Yeah.
So they just signify that everything is Scotland by just having bagpipes blaring in the background at any time. Because nobody that he talks to in Scotland has a Scottish accent. He is the only person who is Scottish in Scotland. But they've just got these bagpipes just blaring away. And then he gets a plane to New York to go and find Connor. And he's got this bit like where he's on the plane and a little like subtitle comes up saying still somewhere over the Atlantic, when you're kind of like, there was never a previously over the Atlantic. That is a really weird little subtitle that pops in. But Sean Connery is... There's a bit where he sees like his face on TV screens in the street, and then he's on the plane. He's like, "Oh my God, I'm on a plane! Oh, I'm flying! This is mad!" I mean, it's like, what are you amazed by, Sean? Because like, you were an immortal that had lived for hundreds and hundreds of years, who had previously been sent from an incredibly advanced, very futuristic race of people in the past, who had mastered time travel, who sent you, got banished, and then you died, and then you have regenerated and brought back to life, and you're amazed by televisions and flight. What?
I just think Sean Connery is just constantly amazed by everything he sees. If you were Sean Connery, you would be walking around going, this is brilliant! Everything is wonderful.
Is it just because he's just like, I'm Sean Connery and everything's fucking great?
Yeah, as long as you're me.
Yeah, everyone else's life fucking sucks.
Can I talk about what else happens yes. while he's on the plane? This is the... we didn't do a very, very long lead-in for this, but this is the super explicit thing that Sean Connery does on the plane. The sexy, sexy time thing. So in the original film, as in this, Sean is on the plane to New York, and he is sat next to a glamorous brunette lady who finds everything he says hilarious. So he's been wining and dining her on this flight. Mm. He's saying things to her like, oh, yes, you look just like Nefertiti, who I knew in a previous life. Mm. You know, a very beautiful woman. You look like Cleopatra. In fact, all of the most beautiful women of history have had dark hair like you. And that is about what we get in the previous film. Now, in this version, it extends a little bit further. And he says... let me just flick through my notes to make sure I find this bit. Yes. Sean Connery turns to her and he looks her straight in the eyes and he goes, it's well known that dark-haired ladies... And then he leans in to whisper in her ear and the sound dips. And me and Tom rewound it and listened fucking carefully. And the full line is, it's well known that dark-haired ladies like to sit on men's faces.
Sean, you do not say that to a stranger on a fucking plane. That is... Well, no, Ramirez doesn't. Sean Connery fucking does. And I think this is like, it's like the bit when he is getting fitted for his new suit and he's just hanging around, just smoking cigars and drinking whiskey and just being a weirdo. That... They've just filmed Sean Connery just doing his own thing.
Doing what he does.
That was between takes. They just left the camera rolling. And he was just like, oh, I think I'm going to crack onto her.
That is so weird. So is he like... I know we're on a...
It's so crass, isn't it?
Because I know we're on a plane, but like, seat over, you know, two for the price of one on these seats.
And... Yeah, fucking hell. And like, I think in the original that maybe just when he leans in, they don't have his... voice, they just have her giggle and you just can assume that he has said something dirty.
I did not assume that.
It is so weird to just have that in there, like, oh, why don't you shit on my face? It's like, what?
To put the, no, like, the director made a conscious choice. He was like, no, this is my original vision.
Yes, exactly.
This is my vision. It's Renegade. God, she looks like she's about 22. Oh. He looks like he's about 65.
He's got that creepy ponytail.
Yeah.
Okay, so... and then, yeah.
We just can't get past that
bit,
no. Really, can we?
Okay, the podcast's over. See you later next time. You still got this amazing bit. Something we didn't talk about again in like the previous, when we talked about, this is the second time we're talking about Highlander 2. I don't feel like most people talk this much about Highlander 2. Is that Katana, played by Michael Ironside.
Now, who's Michael Ironside?
Michael Ironside is a guy who plays baddies in the 80s. And he was like, I know, like, as he was like Richter in Total Recall.
Oh, yes, he was.
See you at the party, Richter. Yeah. And... him paired with the doctor from Scrubs,
who I think is called John C. McGinley,
quite possibly, they are like the two baddies. And my God, they could not have got two guys with straighter, whiter teeth to just like smile maniacally, laugh, and just be just so over the top. Like they're pretty fun. Like the two of them. I mean. The scenery must have been made of ham because they were chewing it for all it was worth.
Yeah, and that, I mean, they're great. They're both of them are absolutely fantastic.
Katana is a super dick.
He's like
just, his motivations are non-existent. He's just like he's just being a massive prick.
He's just like, yeah, I want to go jolly about the future and take over a corporation just because I can.
Yeah, like. None of what he does makes any sense. And it's still, they still have that bit in there where like Connor has to point out to him what you have done makes not a blind bit of sense. I was going to die. It's still there. It's still important. But like what is different in this film is like, so basically in the original cut, I think like Connor only meets him once in the church on holy ground, so they can't fight, and then they have the one fight at the end. In this, they have multiple fights. So what basically happened in the like the end fight in the original cut is really long. It just goes on. It's in all these different settings. What they basically did was they cut three different action set pieces from like what was filmed and just squeezed it all into one big long scene. Whereas in this, there's three different fights with Kitana.
Which works a lot better, I think.
Yeah, like they establish him more as a bad guy. He's always there looming. He just doesn't like just shows up and they have a fight. So there's the bit where like they're fighting in a warehouse and like Connor gets knocked down that lift shaft. And he has to set all his bones again. Then they break into like the prison to go and find Dr. Namath, and it's all like that's where Sean Connery dies by turning off a fan. And in that's where the exciting mountain chase happens.
Right. Yeah, we need to talk about this plot point with the mountain, because this is probably the, other than the whole thing about the time travel, this is the biggest plot difference.
Yes, yeah. So they are, Ramirez has died because he turned off a fan. Connor and Louise are escaping one of the S.H.I.E.L.D. Corporation bases, and then basically Kitana just walks in front of their car and just gets run over, at which point Louise turns to Connor and goes, "Righteous!" and then they drive off into the desert to go and find this coordinates that Namath gave them, where he's said that apparently, like, if you go up this mountain, you can get above the S.H.I.E.L.D. layer and you can see whether the radiation is still there.
This bit's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So while they're driving out there, they're driving through the desert, like through the mountains of the desert, to get to this particular mountain where there's a ladder that goes inside the mountain, like through the caves, that will take them up past where the S.H.I.E.L.D. is. But they're having this drive through the desert filmed in, I would call it, absolute total daylight.
Yeah.
Like midday, blazing desert sun.
Yeah.
They've tried to do a bit of color correction to be like, guys, isn't the sun completely supposed to be blocked out artificially? And they're like, we'll make everything look a bit red. But like, they've got clearly defined shadows. Everyone's got this big shadow on the floor. It's the desert. It's blazing sun. Could they have shot it at night?
Yeah, because everything
could they
else,
maybe have shot it at night?
Everything else in this film is in pitch dark, like,
and it totally removes all the impact, because they get where they're going after the chase. They climb up the ladder through the middle of the mountain, they come up the top, and they're on top of a mountain, and there's blue skies, and they can see for a million miles, and they're like, the ozone layer has repaired itself, everything is fine, we don't need the S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore. It's this amazing moment, completely undercut by the fact that it doesn't look any different up there than it did down there.
Yeah. It's weird. And it also, like, having the mountain, that is cool, but it just means like the S.H.I.E.L.D. must be really low.
Yeah.
Like, so when, like, Ramirez is in that plane, the pilot must be fucking bricking it, because he's, like, fucking razor's edge between, like, the S.H.I.E.L.D. and the land. He's just like,
"Fuck." Oh, my God.
No.
I really hope no one sits on anyone's face in that plane. It's going to tip us backwards.
Yeah. And so then that kind of brings us to the end of the film. They know that the S.H.I.E.L.D. can now be brought down, so they go and storm the base. Just two of them? It's fucking easy to storm the base.
She doesn't even do anything.
Yeah, you have the fight with Kitana, and it's not so boring, because it's not basically three separate pieces like edited together. It's like one short scene by the big S.H.I.E.L.D. beam that all plays out as it does in the original. But there's a little bit extra on the end, whereas basically like the S.H.I.E.L.D. blew up, and you'd have Sean Connery go, "You've got the whole lives ahead of you, Highlander." Credits.
Yeah.
Because the bean counters say, like, "Fuck, we're really near 91 minutes. We've got to get this wrapped up and put to bed."
Lambchop still walks into the beam, doesn't he? Walks into the beam, shuts it down. The S.H.I.E.L.D. disappears. Just like before, it's still a night sky, so it still looks exactly the same. There's no big reveal of
the
sun blazing through.
Yeah,
none of that. But, and then before, it would freeze frame on Lambchop's smirking face as he goes, "Yes." But this time there's a little coda.
Yeah. It's just a bit of a recap to Ramirez talking about, like, when he turned off that fan, being like, "Oh, you put all your life energy into one moment and you can do something great." And then they have a Connor and Louise have a bit of a snog. And everything's all right,
I guess.
The camera
slowly pans up. We see the Earth from space.
Yeah.
The music swells in quite a nice way. It's not abrupt. It feels like a really nice kind of Spielbergian tying a bow on it.
Yeah, it was very abrupt in the original cut. And then that's kind of it. Big banging 80s rock song comes in. Good night.
Tom, I think we should high five because that is the franchise done.
Yeah.
Wait, Woo! That was a shit high five. Let's do a proper one. On mic. Good. We're fucking done, man.
We're done with
this franchise. There is no Highlander committed to feature film that we have not seen.
I think we've seen it all. I'm going to bring up something, and we're definitely not fucking doing it.
Yeah.
But it's just good to know that it is out there. So,
So
this is in what was this, 95? They did this version. Then in 2004, the producers did another special edition of Highlander 2, which is slightly different.
From our research, the main difference we can determine is that the shield is blue, not red.
Yes. They changed the shield to blue. But somebody has done a fan cut, which is called the Special Zeist Edition, where they've basically... they've taken the Renegade version and then put Zeist back into it.
Which isn't that just the first film, Highlander 2, The Quickening?
Well, no,
guys, we're not fucking watching it.
No, but I think because obviously this is a longer film and the scenes are a bit basically they've just put in the bits where they say Zeist instead of just ambiguous the future. But I think the big question here with the Renegade version is I would say yes, it is a better film.
Yes.
The thing that people have an issue with, which I feel is Zeist, they've replaced it with something else that is equally problematic.
I want to know what was in the original shooting script.
So I think it would have been Zeist because but the whole thing is did they even need to bother doing it? Is it significant? It's not so significantly a bet. It's not something it was a masterpiece. It's a better film, but it's still dumb as shit.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
Read out at the start of this episode would have you believe that this was a downtrodden masterpiece, misunderstood.
I mean, it's not, but it just seems that maybe this was just a passion project for the they couldn't let it go, but oh damn, those fucking bean counters. And they couldn't let it go, and they had to go and try and fix it. And they have fixed it to an extent, but there's only so much fixing that you can do with what they have shot. So, was it necessary?
It was not necessary, Tom, but as we've said many times before, none of this is necessary.
That is true.
None of this is necessary, Tom.
No, none of it is necessary. It just seems like such a lot of effort to go to with a film that was so... panned. Unless it was just a passion project for the director, just to be kind of I don't want this black spot on my...
It seems like he really had a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah. It is weird. And I think there are a lot of other instances in the Highlander franchise of cinematic releases and then home releases having different edits.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll get into this in a bit later on.
It feels like more than just a director's cut, still, having watched it. It is, I think, significantly... There's differences to the plot structure. There's differences to, the morals of it. It's more than just we've stuck a few extra scenes in, you know?
Yeah, totally. I'm glad we watched it.
I'm glad we watched it.
I mean, although it'd be worth, saying, I can't believe that we've now watched, Highlander 2 three times.
Yeah, in our lives. So twice for the podcast and once before that.
Yeah, I mean, there's other films that I really like that I have not... I've only seen once and, could probably do with another watch. But no, apparently it's Highlander 2.
Also, another thing we should probably address is the order that we've watched these films. Because we've worked out that the Renegade version of Highlander 2 was released in 1995, which would have meant that... I think were we releasing these episodes in the technically correct order, we would have had to do Highlander, Highlander 2, the animated one, Highlander the Adventure Begins, then Highlander 2 again, and then finally get onto Highlander 3. And guys, I'm really sorry, but we just weren't strong enough. We no. weren't strong enough to do Highlander 2
I think we
twice
needed a bit
in
of
quick succession.
Yeah.
And I'm really pleased because I feel like we've now
come from full circle.
Done like a full circle. On that note of full circle, actually, I would like to do, if I may, a little trip to story time now, because there's something pertinent, you won't believe this, in the novelization of Highlander 1, there's something very, very pertinent to Highlander 2, the Renegade version.
Oh, wow, okay, cool.
But accidentally or not. So for the last time, this is the feature where I read from Highlander, There Can Only Be One, the novelization of the first Highlander film by Mr. Gary Kilworth. Gary Kilworth is an excellent writer who writes incredible novels, but from what I can understand is not so good at writing emails because he has not yet responded. Still, he's had this entire season to respond to me, but he just can't quite get the motivation to write that. So I'm really sorry, but we are destined not to have Gary as a guest on this podcast.
Maybe he's just been slaving away over the novelization of Highlander 2 for eons.
Just
now.
Like piles of notes. He's pulling his hair out. His wife's like, Gary, come to bed. You're never going to make sense of it. He's like, I can't. I'm a renegade. So I'm going to read the end of the book. I'm going to read the last pages to you, which, don't forget, this deals with the end of Highlander 1, not the end of Highlander 2. But as I mentioned, there is something pertinent that will then lead to this. This is from page 310 of Highlander, There Can Only Be One, the novelization. And this is the very, very end of the story. This is after MacLeod has defeated the Kurgan. This is after he's won the prize. He's now no longer immortal. He's fully human. And he's able to have children. And he is having a nice little celebration with his girlfriend, Brenda. Brenda Wyatt, who is the forensics expert from the first film. So they're having a nice bottle of wine and just talking about how nice everything is now. So here it is, for the last ever time. This is story time with Toddly Tea. Brenda took a bottle of wine out of the basket they had brought. Let's have a toast, she said.
Yeah, I think we should.
He looked at the label on the bottle and laughed.
1976, he said.
Brenda nudged him.
1976 was a good year. America celebrated its 200th year of independence from Britain. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest won 5 Academy Awards.
And, he was laughing at her now,
and Pittsburgh beat Dallas in the Super Bowl.
Really?
Really. 21-17.
MacLeod said,
here's to 1976.
They clinked glasses. He added,
to a great woman, Brenda Wyatt, whom I love.
She looked into his eyes. And I love you. They spent 2 months touring Scotland before going down to London, where they opened an antique shop in Camden Alley. On one occasion, he had to go to Scotland on business and stopped off at a small village in the southern uplands. From there, he climbed up, taking a mountain path to a shelf overlooking the valley. There was no croft there now, but he found some of the stones from the old tower and the spot where Heather was buried.
You would like her, Heather. Sorry. You would like her, Heather, he said. I know you would. She is much like you.
He said nothing more. Instead, he found 2 old timbers and built a rough cross, laying it over the place where his wife, Heather, was resting. He stayed there until nightfall, in the company of distant loved ones, comfortable with the ghosts of a different life. And thus ends Story Time with Toddly Tea.
Oh, that was nice.
That was nice. And it's a nice ending. I like the fact that he opens an antique shop with Brenda. But the reason that this comes nicely full circle and ties in is twofold. In Highlander 3, Brenda is revealed to have died in a car accident in Scotland, which is quite sad. So I guess he must have gone up to go build a grave for his ex, his previous wife from another life. Brenda is like, where's he gone? I'm going to drive up. Terrible car accident. That is unfortunate. However, in Highlander 2, the Renegade version, we see the death of Brenda slightly differently.
Yeah.
She is in a hospital bed with extreme sunburn, the worst sunburn you've ever seen. And she's blind. She's got bandages all over her eyes. She's been destroyed by the sun.
Yes.
And then the camera pans back and there's thousands of other people in this situation.
In the solar radiation ward, which is like an aircraft-like hangar or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why McCloud is like, that's why he's, I'm going to stop this. He's apparently immune from radiation as an immortal, I guess. He's completely spotless.
But he's not an immortal at that point.
You're right. That's weird, isn't
it? Yeah. He just put on, like factor 50 or something.
Yeah. He's just got that beautiful skin.
Yeah.
That lamb chop skin.
Ah. Now, okay. So this is a weird thing as well with, like, why they felt compelled to go back and redo this film, yet it is still not considered canon.
Yeah, it can't be.
So, like, why bother in that, you know, why go and fix a film that you were still not going to count as a valid entry into the series?
On the subject of its validity, I think we need to, again for the last time, pay a little homage to Rules Corner.
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 Rules Corner. Okay, we're back in Rules Corner. We're going to say goodbye, but we're going to go out on a high. Because, I mean, yeah, Highlander 2 in any incarnation just plays fast and loose with the rules here, doesn't it? And
is there one version that you think is more valid than the other or less wrong?
No, I don't know. I almost think that Zeist makes more sense than fucking time. Like, because time travel is something that people generally should not touch in film writing.
Unless you're amazing
at
it.
Yeah, it makes it so complicated. And you just have to, you know, you have to let a lot of things go, I think, when you're dealing with time travel. Because you can just be, yeah, but what if, And it is a kind of like a nebulous concept. But, like, just being like, they're aliens. Yeah, fine. I mean, it... You know, it's not great, but it gave us a reason why the immortals are there, and we still don't really. So we don't still have a reason because, you know, like, okay, so like the Zeist version is not canon, and this time travel version is, you know, like they went and redid this film. It's still not considered like relevant to any of the other films. So there's still like, what is the reason for the immortals?
Yeah. And it still doesn't address the fact that in the first film, Ramirez and McCloud didn't know each other, even though if they were time travelers, they would have known each other. Like, it still does. If this is Russell Mulcahy, the director, restoring his original vision that was ruined by the bean counters, then the bean counters must have been looking over his shoulder when he was first
I don't think Russell Mulcahy wrote this.
Did he not?
I don't think he did. I think somebody else wrote it, and he was just brought in to direct it. So he was kind of doing the best with what he had.
Right.
I mean, I could be wrong, but like,
he gave it a good shot.
All they needed to do was put in, when they were doing like the Council of Not Zeist, with their totally motionless no lip movement dialogue, just be like, we will wipe your memories.
That's it, a little line.
All you needed to do is say that, and then that would explain why they don't know each
other. But then how would Ramirez work it out? Because Ramirez knew everything, really. He knew about the quickening. He knew he was immortal. He knew how to find McCloud.
Well, he found it out somewhere. I mean, how did he know it all anyway? How did he know it all in Highlander 1? Because that is, in Highlander 1, how do they know? This is the big
question. Because it's a kind of magic!
Just how... How do they know about the prize and no fighting on holy ground and how do they know all the rules if they don't come from a society like Zeist or the past and they're just, it's just some shit that happens?
I wonder if we're just asking too much.
I know, but it just seems like it should have been addressed at some point during the series. But we'll hold on that because we can talk this out a bit more in our next episode.
The franchise wrap up.
Yeah.
So we did this at the end of season one because we've talked in length about each of these films individually and we've drawn little connections from one to the other. But we're done. We got no more movies to watch, guys. And it feels good and it feels sad and it feels exciting.
And it feels right.
And it feels right. But so what we're going to do is next week's episode will be about all of the franchise as a whole. We're going to talk about all of the movies. We're going to talk about a lot of things that aren't the movies as well. Because there's so much other stuff that makes up these franchises. And that is when we will be revealing the subject of season 3.
Ooh-hoo-hoo.
Which we think we've chosen, but we're going to sit on it a little bit longer, leave you guys guessing.
Yeah.
So until then, thank you so much for doing the ridiculous task of listening to us as we traipse our way through this franchise.
Yeah.
As I think I've said it before, but this whole thing would be a lot weirder if we were doing it and nobody was listening. So it's really, really cool. And more and more of you are getting in touch with us. And every single time that you do, it just puts a big honking great big smile on our faces.
Yeah.
Sorry for the moment of earnest sincerity. I know that's breaking character slightly, but it's really, really nice when you get in touch. So please do keep it coming. You can reach us on Twitter at BitterEndPod. You can like us on Facebook at BitterEndPod. If you leave a comment, we will answer it. I don't think we've ever not answered a comment. You can even email us at bitterendpod@gmail.com if you just want to chat in private, and we will absolutely respond. So until next time, for the franchise wrap-up, I'm Todd Jordan.
I'm Tom Denny.
Catch you later, sweet potato.
Bye.